B-Pod Studios.
Today on Talkin' Rock with Meltdown.
It's that time of year. The Trans-Siberian Orchestra machine is about to fire up. And we've got guitarist Joel Hoekstra and drummer Jeff Plate on Talkin' Rock today. Joel's up first. We talk about his time. I mean, he plays for like 8 different bands. He also tells you about the rehearsal process for TSO.
They do like the test pyro run and production run on the other stage while we're playing.
Between TSO, Cher, and Whitesnake, Joel is a busy, busy guy. As a matter of fact, Whitesnake dropped a record this year called Flesh and Blood. Joel told me all about it.
Well, I think if you include the deluxe edition, I think I co-wrote 7 songs with David.
Up next is drummer Jeff Plate. It's no secret that he grew up a gigantic Kiss fan. Would he put the makeup on if they asked him to play?
I would love to. I mean, how cool is that?
We discuss everything he's got going on, favorite drummers, as well as a project he's working on for next year, which he was real secretive about.
I'm going to jump right back into the original project that I've got going on with my friend here, and I think we come up with something pretty cool.
Guitarist Joel Hoekstra and drummer Jeff Plate from the Trans-Siberian Orchestra are my guests today on Talkin' Rock.
This is Talkin' Rock. Talkin' Rock. Your backstage pass to some of your favorite rock artists. Here's your host, Meltdown.
As always, a big thank you for checking out the Talkin' Rock with Meltdown podcast. If you do like this podcast, 5-star ratings, writing reviews, sharing it with your friends as well. And of course, subscribe.
And also consult a qualified therapist.
Yeah, that's right. If you do like this, yeah, that could be an issue. But yeah, subscribe. I don't say that enough, but yeah, you should subscribe because we're coming out new content all the time. Just talked with Gavin Rosdell last week. Mm-hmm. And for you Twisted fans out there, I'm going to put this one out there because I interviewed Twisted the other day in their home HQ. And it's a really cool interview, and that's going to be posted next week. So if you're a Twisted fan, definitely check back. And like I said, subscribe. Meltdown, Al Beck is off to the left of me. We've got some rock news. Of course, the passing of a rock and roll icon. Green Day did announce their tour last podcast. We were talking about the rumor and all that other kind of stuff, right?
That's right, yeah.
So we'll talk about that. Ozzy's health. A new song from Ghost that was released, which I'm not really crazy about. And we'll get into some more stuff as far as our rock news is concerned. Have you seen Trans-Siberian Orchestra?
I have not, actually.
Somehow doesn't surprise me at all.
Well, here's my thing, is they always seem to come through Detroit after Christmas, and by then I don't care anymore.
Yeah, they always do, you're right. So they're coming through this time around on December 28th, and it's like I'm usually gone. I've only seen them, I want to say I've seen them twice, but I usually head out of town. But yeah, I'm not going to be able to see them this time around either. But I'll tell you what, the show is amazing. The musicianship is really second to none. And this thing, as far as money and stuff, rivals some of the top acts. And they only tour for like a month. So they have an East Coast and a West Coast band. And it's kind of cool because Joel Hoekstra here coming up will tell me how they kind of, you know, they actually rent out this arena in the middle of America and they practice. And it's interesting to see how they do it. Paul O'Neill, who was like the brains behind TSO, who I never got a chance to meet, but was super nice, actually sent me some gold TSO records, and it was really cool. He kind of, you know, let me in as far as like what's going on with the band and how they do things. And so I kind of brought it up to Joel. Great conversation here with an awesome guitar player and a pretty good dude. It's Joel Hoekstra today and Jeff Plate coming up here in a few minutes on Talkin' Rock with Meltdown.
Hey, it's Joel Hoekstra from TSO here.
Hey, Joel, you're early. What kind of rock star are you?
Yeah, I know. We try and call in a couple early just to give you guys a chance to be all set and ready to go.
No problem. My boss actually walked in. He's like, are you recording? I'm like, no, but my phone's ringing, so now I am. So anyways, good to hear your voice. Thanks for checking in. How's things with you?
Everything's great, man. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. It's like, the first thing that always comes to my mind when I'm talking to you is how do you find the time, not only in the day, but in the year, to accomplish all that you're doing?
Well, very carefully. No, I just try and be productive every day, man. And thankfully, like in terms of juggling the three major gigs together with Whitesnake, Cher, and TSO, David did a great thing in being accommodating to TSO for the schedule, and Cher does as for both of them, for Whitesnake and TSO, kind of letting me come and go and caters her schedule in terms of when I come in and out to them. So that's been great of her. And at It's awesome. I appreciate it very much.
Now, are there some dates sometimes when you just can't make, you know, the gigs or whatever, and somebody else will fill in for you on share or something?
Yeah, absolutely. I have a sub. Actually, I had two people fill in on share this year.
And that's for when you're out with TSO?
Or White Snake.
Okay,
yeah.
I got you. All right, yeah. I mean, doing all those gigs and stuff, you know, I've seen, of course, the TSO show a lot of times. You're so great to watch and to see you play. And I'm sure that you're looking forward to getting back out there again this year. You got your, I just talked to Jeff Plate yesterday. You got your rehearsals coming up in Omaha coming up, right, at the end of October or so?
Yeah, absolutely.
And so, and then tell people how the, because Paul was explaining this to me one time years ago, but explain to people how these rehearsals work, because this isn't like anything I've ever heard of before.
Well, as some may or may not know, we kind of send out, we're one big band that works on the music together, but we send out, basically, we break off into two bands to take the show out, because you, obviously you want to maximize the amount of shows that can be played around Christmas time. So there's a TSO West and a TSO East. And basically in the rehearsal process, in the arena that we're in, we have the stages set facing each other. So there's two full arena setups in there. And when one band is on the main stage, essentially the other band is in the locker room, like kind of in what becomes a rehearsal room, practicing in there. So we two kind of take turns just going back and forth. So yeah, it's pretty amazing. It's one of a kind. I can't think of any other reason anybody would do that. So it's pretty awesome.
Now, I think Paul was telling me one time that while you guys are playing on the one stage, do they have the pyro and the production going on the other stage?
Yeah, that's true. And then they do that as well. Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
So you can kind of see what's going on.
Yeah, absolutely. They do like the test pyro run and production run on the other stage while we're playing. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously, at some of these dates, like here in Detroit on the 28th of December, you'll do two shows. So you guys pretty much know, you guys are pretty choreographed to know where you got to be for certain things like that. But is this all from scratch at the beginning of the year? Or do you guys actually kind of keep certain songs in certain areas and do certain things?
Well, I mean, obviously the front half, it depends on what story / rock opera we're doing. And I mean, we're going to be doing Christmas Eve and Other Stories, which is the one that put us on the map, essentially made TSO what it is today. But we haven't done this in 7-8 years. So we do know the songs for the front half, but it's going to be a reimagining of it. So probably tweak some things musically, and obviously production wise, there's much more available than there was 7-8 years ago. I mean, we didn't even have video screens going on really back then. Certainly nothing like we do now. So it's going to be very exciting. In terms of the back half, no. They give us a song list about a month before we get to rehearsals and say, here's, just know all these songs. And then once we hit rehearsals, it starts to take shape. The set list usually comes about in, I would say, the middle of rehearsals. We kind of know what the set is going to look like. And maybe there's still a tweak or two. You know, sometimes, like last year, all the way down to the last, right before the show, there was still tiny tweaks happening.
Yeah. And so when do you actually celebrate Christmas? Are you actually home on Christmas Day?
Not this particular year. When the show has like a New York City area show on the 26th, because we don't play on Christmas Eve or Christmas, so it all depends what city we're staying in on those days. You know, obviously you don't want everybody flying home from something like this around that time of year with all the weather and everything like that. So you basically just stay in whatever city you're in, and that's that. And so this time I think we're going to be in Columbus. But there's been a couple of years. I live in New York City where we've had our New Jersey area show. And so I've been able to stay at home on the 24th and 25th.
So let's talk about some of the other things you have going on in your life. So what's happening with Whitesnake right now?
So we had a new album come out this year called Flesh and Blood, and we toured the U.S. In support of that. Then we toured the Europe over the summer, and actually just getting ready in a couple days heading down to South America to do about a month down there in support of it. And next year I know we're going to Japan, and I think we've got some other things in the works. So the touring kind of stretches actually all the way into next year.
So tell me about this this record. And I mean, it came out on Frontiers and stuff this year. And how much input do you have into the Whitesnake machine?
Well, I think if you include the deluxe edition, I think I co-wrote 7 songs with David Coverdale. So I got in on the writing, and as things went on and we were just taking notes on the album, he kind of pulled me in as co-producer along the way, which I thought was really cool of him. Obviously very honored to have both of those opportunities. So and obviously I play guitar on all of it. So yeah, quite a bit.
How much fun, by the way, is it to work with David? I've never met him in person, but I've interviewed him a few times, and he's one of the funnest people to talk to. I know that.
David's awesome, man. And he does a great interview. He's a great conversationalist. He's always very on when he's very in tune to what you know everybody's saying. And as you know, I mean, he can crack you up. So he'll get on a roll where you just start to think, oh, he's just one of the guys, and you start laughing, and then all of a sudden he starts telling you about working with Jimmy Page or working with Ritchie Blackmore, and you go, oh yeah, wait a minute. this guy's rock royalty and I'm just a nobody. So you know, it's very cool. David and I have a great rapport, great working relationship, awesome dude.
Yeah, what is the dichotomy of your thoughts about being in a band and then playing for Cher? You know, I mean, is it Cher, you're like kind of like the hired gun thing, but in Whitesnake you're in a band.
Yeah, I mean, there's a big difference in terms of, I guess, your overall value to it. But it doesn't mean I don't enjoy the Cher gig. I totally do. It's awesome. It's something that, like, I wouldn't have set out to do when I was 11 years old. I wasn't sitting there with my guitar going, someday I'm going to play for Cher. So it came out of left field. But nowadays, I got to be honest with you, I'm having a ball doing it. It's great musicians, and she's obviously an iconic performer. So, hey, man, you know, it's a great opportunity for me. But Whitesnake, definitely. You know, I'm on the shirt, I'm on the album, I got to write. So yeah, I mean, it's a much bigger bad English here, but I feel like I can contribute much more in that band. I'm much more of an important factor.
Right, and plus it's like, you know, and look, Whitesnake is Whitesnake, and this record has the classic Whitesnake feel, and that's something you have to go into being cognizant of as well, right?
Yeah, I mean, as far as the way Whitesnake albums turn out, people have to realize it's always David's vision. David's got a vision of what he wants the album to be, and most of the songs started with his ideas, and Reb Beach would finish the ideas with him, either one of us or both of us together. Reb and I demoed the stuff up and got it to the guys, but David's going to always write all the lyrics, and he's going to write all the vocal melodies, so the sound of a Whitesnake album and what it is always has so much more to do with David than it does anybody else. So people make a big deal about the lineup changes and who does what, but honestly, you know, David is he's the spirit, you know, he's our leader. So he's always going to have the most to do with the way a Whitesnake album sounds, and it's really our job to be there to support that vision and do the very best we can for him.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned Reb Beach, underrated guitarist or what?
Yeah, I mean, Rev's an underrated musician, I think, more than he is underrated guitarist. I think most people know he's, like, ripping with his chops and his tapping and everything like that, but he's a really great rhythm guitar player, which not all shredders are. He's really, really tight, great, great riff writer. He's got a great voice. A lot of people don't know that. He's a really good singer. So, yeah, Rev's got a lot of good stuff going on that people don't realize, and he makes for a great bandmate. He's got a great sense of humor. That's pretty much goes for everybody in this lineup of Whitesnake. So we have a really good time out there for sure, dude.
Hey, speaking of, you know, touring with Whitesnake and stuff, one of my friends was on a tour with you guys, Shakes. You know Shakes?
Oh, yeah, right on, man.
Yeah, I saw him just the other day, and I told him, I said, give me a question for Joel, because I got to think about that, and I forgot to text him today. But, yeah, Shakes, I've known him for, man, decades. So from right here
in
Detroit.
Yeah, it seems like everybody in Detroit knows Shakes.
Yeah, he's been around for quite a while.
I'm not kidding. It's like I go through Detroit and everybody's like, hey, you know my friend.
Yeah. I came here in 1995 from Western New York, outside of Buffalo, where I grew up, and I was on the radio there. But anyways, when Shakes is one of the first people I actually kind of met when I got here. I've known him for that long. So he was one of
them. Oh, okay.
And we talk about it sometimes, too, you know. And, of course, you know, with all his Kid Rock and stuff and all those connections as well. So yeah, Shakes is a good guy.
Yeah, totally, dude.
Yeah. Hey, a couple weeks ago I met a guitar hero of mine, Brad Gillis, and you played with him in Night Ranger. I only met him for like real brief, but in my life, Brad Gillis to me was, of course, he's in Night Ranger, but he was Speak of the Devil, which was like just such a great live album. But talk about your time in Night Ranger.
Yeah, I had a really great time with those guys. I mean, I joined very much unknown in the hard rock scene at the time. So I learned a lot from those guys, had a great time, made a couple great studio records with them, and obviously a live acoustic album that we put out, and shared a lot of great touring experiences. So, you know, I wish them all nothing but the best. And there you go, man.
Yeah. So when you let me go back to the Whitesnake thing here real fast. So you're talking about, you know, playing with Night Ranger, kind of getting in and stuff. And then you're in Whitesnake and you say you got your picture on the shirts and that. Do you send those to your mom and that?
No, not really, man.
I would.
My mom would. No, I think my mom would probably actually dig it. But at a point, you know, some of this stuff starts to just, you know, to be overkill. If everything I achieved or did, I was sending to my mom to relatives, she'd, you know, the whole basement would be full. You know, so it's at a point you gotta draw the line somewhere. But it's never lost on me. I always think it's cool. You know, growing up as a kid in suburban Chicago, I wasn't supposed to be doing all the stuff I'm getting to be able to do right now. So I definitely don't take it for granted, but I also don't. I try not to, you know, become one of those egoed out guys, or, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, I'm just a guy who plays guitar and obviously just trying to do the best at every turn with that. So that's really my focus, more than like, hey, mom, check it out. Mom, check it out. I mean, she's already proud of me. It's all good.
No, I mean, look, I'm in the same boat as you are, because like I said, I grew up outside of Western New York, and then I get to talk to rock stars, and I'm on this legendary radio station in Detroit, you know, so it's not lost on me as well. So how many times have you introduced your mom to Cher?
I haven't yet.
Come on,
I mean,
really?
No. I mean, Cher is... That's one of those situations where, you know, I mean, she comes in and she's in show mode already. They take her in, they're getting her in makeup and wardrobe, and there's not really the opportunity for any of us. We have a circle before the show where all the people in the show, we kind of hold hands and she'll say something, or she'll ask one of us to say something. And that's really about it. She's a total pro, man. I mean, she's been at this a long time and she's awesome. I mean, very friendly. I don't want to give you the wrong idea. It's just that there's not a whole lot of, like, you know, let's hang out and talk and chit chat. She's a pro.
I got you. All right, final thing here for you. Of course, you got, you know, the Whitesnake tours dates, like you said, down in South America coming up. You got the TSO, everything. What do you got locked and loaded for 2020?
Well, I know that, you know, David kind of tweeted out the other day. It hasn't officially been announced, but he tweeted that, you know, we'll be headed to Japan. I know we had a little delay with that this year, so that's happening. And there's some other stuff, I think, in the works. I think the support for Flesh and Blood is not nearly done. And I know Cher has some residency dates announced already for February in Vegas. And I'll be going on the Monsters of Rock cruise like I do every year in February. So, yeah, a lot of stuff happening right around the corner, even early 2020.
Yeah, that's a cool thing. I got to get out there. Harlan's always bugging me to get on that Monster of Rock cruise, and I wish I could do it one of these years.
Oh, it's so much fun, dude. You got to go.
Yeah,
it's a ball. Man.
I know.
I mean, it's really a blast. So you get done with that and just be like, whew, you need a week to recover.
Oh, I've heard lots of stories from Chip and all sorts of people that have been on it. Yeah, exactly. So
well, look, you're going to hang out with Chip for 4 or 5 days. That alone is going to be that you need a week to recover.
That's true. Hey, Joel.
Chip is awesome. No, I love him.
He's great. No, a lot of those bands, you know, I was just telling someone the other day, it's like all these bands I grew up listening to, and now some of them I call friends, and it's just, you know, and look, they're not as big as they used to be when I was a kid growing up, but it's like they're great people, and it's like, you're right, a lot of those guys are awesome. There's no question.
Yeah, man. Well, I don't know if you know the story with me and Chip, but I mean, my first band that I was in, he was from Blue Island, which was where the drummer from my very first band was from, and Chip used to come to our gigs when I was like 15, 16 years old, and he was on MTV and a big rock star. So, I mean, that was, I look back on that like, you know, super cool. So anytime I see him, I always have gratitude for that and the fact that he used to come down and support us. You know, I was just a little kid, man, and that was always an incredible feeling to know we had like a real rock star at our gig. So he's a great dude.
Well, yeah, I'm going to text him and tell him that we were name-dropping him. It was his birthday the other day. I just texted him, like, Tuesday, I think.
Oh, cool. Right on. Give him my best, man. Give him my best.
You got it. Well, Joel, thanks so much for the time. We'll see you here with TSO. Congrats on the Whitesnake record, by the way. It really is killer. And everything you do, man, it's just always a pleasure to talk to you. And nothing but the best.
Thank you so much, man. Appreciate your time today.
We'll talk to you soon. Thanks, man.
All right. Cheers.
Halfway through our TSO special spectacular meltdown talking rock podcast, Are you feeling the Christmas spirit yet?
You know, it's starting to happen.
A little bit, okay. Yeah, well, maybe when we talk to Jeff, it'll put you in that kind of mood.
Right.
I mean, it's not even Halloween yet.
No, exactly.
It's not even Columbus Day.
Yeah. No, it's not. No, it's not even, you're right. It's not even Columbus Day yet, which is why when they come through after, I just haven't seen them. By the time we get to Christmas, I'm exhausted.
Yeah. Jeff played as a killer drummer, and he's played it with, you know, Metal Church and Sabotage. And so this guy's like the real deal when it comes to a drumming. I had a chance to meet him a couple years back, and he seemed like a really nice guy. And I've interviewed him a couple times here. And he lives in mid-state New York, and I guess just by talking to him, he doesn't want to leave and go anywhere anytime soon. But a super good dude here, Jeff Plate. Al Beck with Rock News coming up after Jeff right here on Talking Rock.
Good. You know, it's like, even though we have, you know, 6-7 months off, it goes by in a flash, and next thing you know, I'm on the phone speaking to people like you, and the tour is right around the corner, so it's all good.
Yeah, that's right. You know, I was driving home today from something I did this morning. I got a text message to reply to a dentist appointment I have in February. So, yeah, time does fly. I'll be here before you know it, you know.
Exactly, yep.
So, real fast, what have you done this year? I see, like, on your Facebook and stuff that you've played with this band, like, Sun Sonic or something, but have you done anything this year? I couldn't really dig out anything that you've really done besides TSO last year.
Well, I was in the band Metal Church for, God, close to 12 years, and I stepped out of that band a couple of years ago just to spend more time at home. And you know, a lot of life on the road is there's a lot of wear and tear involved in that. So I really figured I needed to focus on what was going on at home, plus focus on, you know, my health and my career with TSO. So actually this year, I got together with a friend of mine and a guitar player friend, Tony Cook. We started working on an original project, and as we were doing this, I ran into a couple guys who were like, hey, we would love to put together like an 80s band, an 80s rock band, you know, Sunset Strip, glam, blah, 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 Van Halen, Kiss. And I was like, all right, well, come on up and play, and let's see what this sounds like. Well, it ended up sounding fantastic. So I said, okay, guys, let's put this together. When I got these guys together and listened to them sing and play, the set list came together within like a day. But coming up with the name Sun Sonic took us a while, just juggling words around and trying to come up with something cool and original. But it's a lot of fun. And, you know, I love playing the drums. I love playing that kind of music. And especially when you're in a good group of people, it's not work. You know, it's just fun. So that has taken up my time. I also do some teaching at home, too. I've got a number of students from, you know, 8 years old up to 70 years old, everybody in between. So I'm doing something musically, you know, drum-related throughout the year. And like I just mentioned, all of a sudden here it is September, and we're on the phone talking about the next TSO tour. And it all comes around quick, but I'm never sitting around idle for too long.
So you mentioned, you know, Metal Church. Is that the last band that you recorded a record with?
Yes, it is.
So do you miss the studio at all? Or like you said, you're having fun playing with this other band, you're teaching all this other kind of stuff. Do you miss recording?
Yes, I do. But I actually recorded the last couple of records I did, I recorded in my own studio. So this is the beauty of technology today. I was able to record my drum tracks here in upstate New York and send them to Seattle, where Metal Church is based out of. And, you know, it's just so much different than it used to be back in the day when you're actually in a recording studio recording the tape. Now the digital world has allowed you to do a lot of things just from your home. So to comment on that, I miss being in the big studio. But I'm always recording and doing some work here at home.
Yeah, that almost kind of seems like cheating.
Well, it's the way of the world, and you know you need to get your head wrapped around it and take advantage of it while you can. But boy, it certainly does make things, you know, a lot easier to, you know, instead of navigating across the country and trying to move yourself all over the place to get to a studio and work with some people. You can do it right from your home. And honestly, if you put the time into it and learn how to do this, it sounds very good. So, you know, it's the way of the world. Like I said, you know, it's completely different than it was back in the 70s and 80s.
Yeah, I would think that, like, you know, being so far away from the rest of your bandmates and stuff, that you might lose a little bit of the feel or the chemistry, no?
you cannot replace music being created by a group of people in a room together. But when it's logistically impossible to do that, you have to, you know, land, you have to watch them. So, you know, it can be, there can be an advantage to it. There can be a disadvantage to it. And I know exactly where you're coming from with this, but, you know, here again, you kind of take what you got and you work with it and make the best of it.
Gotcha. Well, you know what? If I lived in upstate New York where you do, I wouldn't want to leave either. So
you got that right.
I just went to, I was just back home. So I grew up in Western New York and I was in the Finger Lakes riding my Harley Davidson a few weeks ago. And it's like, that's God's country out there, man.
Oh, so whereabouts were you?
I grew up by Darien Lake. So have you ever played Darien Lake?
I've never played there. I've been there a number of times. I'm about 15 minutes south of Watkins Glen.
Okay.
South of Seneca Lake.
I've been to Watkins Glen several times, and the last time I was just home, we went through Sloan. We stopped there, and so.
Oh, yeah, yep.
Yeah, the little town.
Beautiful,
yeah.
Up here.
Yeah, exactly. So, hey, you mentioned Kiss a little while ago. So Kiss was really like the impetus for you really getting into music, right?
Yeah, when I was a kid, I remember, you know, I think I was 13. I talked my parents into letting me stay up late and watch the midnight special, and Kiss came out, and I was like, wow. It just completely blew me into orbit. And at that very moment, I knew that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to play drums. I'm going to be in a band. And who would think that all these years later, you know, I was in one of the biggest touring acts in the country, rivaling, you know, I don't want to say rivaling Kiss because that sounds like sacrilege, but the TSO show is one of the best, you know, most dynamic shows out there on the road. And I truly believe that.
So let me ask you, let me ask you two questions about that. So have you seen the final tour, and have you ever met Peter, Chris, or any of the guys to tell them that story?
I have never met Peter, Chris. I've met the other guys. And yes, I did see the tour this year in March. I thought it was fantastic. I've talked to Eric Singer a number of times. I really haven't had a chance to talk to Paul or Gene directly one-on-one. But you know what? I'm one of millions. I'm sure that Kiss inspired so many people, you know, maybe not to be musicians, but just in whatever walk of life they were in or whatever career they were choosing. It's really amazing. I mean, TSO touring for 21 years, that's one thing. Kiss, since the mid-70s up until now, and they're still fantastic. It's a real testament to those guys and the amount of work and the good songs that they wrote over the years. So, you know, I can't thank them enough for being the inspiration, and we're going to miss them.
Yeah. If you had a chance to put on the face paint, you probably would, huh?
I would love to. I mean, how cool is that?
Man, that would be something, yeah. I guess those are what dreams are made of right there. So so you got TSO coming up here. Anything else going on with you besides TSO? I mean, you said you're teaching, you're doing all this other stuff, but is there any plans in 2020 to get back with any other bands, or record anything, tour anywhere, or just going to do TSO and that's going to be it for right now?
Well, when I get home from the tour, obviously there is a recovery period because it's quite a demanding, exhausting tour. But I'm going to jump right back into the original project that I've got going on with my friend here. And I think we come up with something pretty cool. So I'm going to try to get this recorded, hopefully get something released by the springtime. We've yet to settle on a name, but the news will be out there. And I'm hoping to, like I said, hopefully by spring next year, we'll get some material out for the people to hear.
So there's another band that's touring right now. It's going to be going on tour. That's selling a lot of tickets, too. And that's Tool. Are you a Danny Carey fan?
Yes, he's fantastic. He is fantastic.
So if you had to pick one, like Neil Peart or Danny Carey, where would you go?
Neil Peart.
Yeah, would you? Yeah.
Neil Peart. I love the Tool music. Is very, very cool. It is dark. It is ominous. I think Rush in general was a little more inspiring, you know, a little brighter, so to speak.
Right.
But Neil Peart, I mean, I think anybody that's my age or that's been drumming for the past 25 years, Neil Peart has to be one of your influences. He just did so much for drumming and rock music in general. But, you know, that's another band that is retired, and we certainly miss them, too.
Yeah. Have you had a chance to meet Neil before?
I have not.
Yeah, I don't. Not. I haven't met many people that have met Neil, except for, I guess, Getty and Alex.
Yeah, Neil seems to be kind of a, you know, he always just shy away from that. And, hey, everybody's wired differently. You know, some people can't wait to get out there and talk to people and be that. And there's some people that it's just, you know, it's interesting. You think of Neil being on the middle of that stage in front of 12,000 people or whatever or more, doing drum solos, doing all this and that, how he would be so
reclusive.
Yeah. It's just kind of strange. But, you know, like I said, everybody's wired differently.
Yeah. In his book, he talked about riding 55,000 miles on his motorcycle one year. And I think he said like three people recognized him wherever he went. So,
yep. Ghost Rider.
There you go. So you got TSO coming up. When do rehearsals start? And is there anything new and different about this year that you can entice fans with?
Well, rehearsals start at the end of October. This year, we are bringing back out Christmas Eve and Other Stories, which was the first CD that we released back in 96. And this was the first story that we toured on with TSO. We actually toured it for 12 years before we explored the other records. And then last couple of years was A Ghost of Christmas Eve. But Christmas Eve and Other Stories is really what put us on the map.
Right.
And we have not done the tour for a long time. There has been a lot of requests for it. We lost Paul a couple of years ago, and, you know, this was something he was talking about doing back before we lost him. So his family and management decided this was a good time, and I can't wait because, like I said, that story and that CD is really what put TSO on the map. Now with the newer production, the quality of the show has just risen tremendously over the past dozen years or so. So it's going to be great to get the story back out on the road, and I think the fans are going to absolutely love it.
All right, well, a couple of things here before we let you go, so I know you got other interviews. So I'm talking to Joel Hoekstra later. So what do I ask a guy like Joel? I mean, what should I know? Give me something fun to ask him about.
Oh, my God.
Have you heard the new Whitesnake record?
Yes, I have. I think it's great.
Yeah.
I think it's great. I mean, hey, you know what? They weren't trying to invent the wheel. It's right. Like, hey, this is Whitesnake.
Right.
And it sounds fantastic. I absolutely love the record front to back. I think all the songs are very strong. And I saw the band earlier this year. They sounded great. Tommy Aldridge, one of my influences, one of my heroes, you know, he's still up there doing his thing and doing that drum solo. And it's like, man, good for you, dude. You know, he's up there in age, but he kicks ass every night, and it's really an inspiration to watch him play. But, hey, you know, Joel is all over the place. It's Whitesnake, it's Cher, it's Rock of Ages, and then we strap him in for TSO for 2 months. So it's always a pleasure working with Joel. He's a real pro.
Yeah, it's always great to watch you guys. I was going to say, because you're up on that high riser and stuff, Joel never kind of gets in your way. You can always see you as well, so...
He's a big guy too, so good thing I'm up there.
Yeah. Well, listen, man, good luck on everything this winter. It's always great when TSO comes to the Motor City and plays two big shows in the same day, which I still can't understand how you guys can do that, but that's always fun. And good luck with rehearsals and everything else, and maybe in 2020 we'll hear something new from you.
Very good. Sounds good, man. Thanks for your time.
Thanks so much, Jeff. See you later.
Take care. Bye.
There's Jeff Plate on the Talkin' Rock with the Meltdown podcast. And yeah, he said he would don the Kiss makeup and play for Kiss if he got the chance. Would you throw on the Gene Simmons? Well, I guess you can't really replace Gene, can you? You're a bass player, though. So,
yeah, but
or
I,
so you say.
I don't like Kiss. I don't like Kiss.
You don't like Kiss. You've never seen TSO. You've never seen the Bohemian
TSO.
Rhapsody.
I like TSO, and I do want to watch Bohemian Rhapsody, whether I end up getting to it or not. But I, dude, I'm sorry. I'm going to piss off some people, but I hate Kiss. I really
do. What do you hate about them?
I just, dude, I think they're so overrated. I think they're terrible.
You know what? It's like,
And I also hate Gene Simmons. I think he's obnoxious. I'm going to get you reblocked. Do you really want to talk to me? He just unblocked you on Twitter, and I'm talking about how much I hate him on your podcast.
Yeah, for those of you guys that don't know, Gene Simmons did have me blocked on Twitter. I thought to myself, this is a few.
If he could block me, that'd be great. Yeah. I would, yeah. Maybe I should tweet to him, hey, Gene, please block me.
You don't don't even follow him, probably.
I don't.
No.
Which would be even funnier.
You know what, dude? I got to be honest. I love Gene Simmons. I've had a chance to meet him a few times.
An ass.
You know what, though? But you know what, though? And I hear you. I understand you, okay? But it's like, it's one of these things where there are a few rock stars that are just like that, but it's like, it suits them. Like him and like Ted Nugent. I always tell people, like, these kind of rock stars bring like egomaniac, you know, to a new level. You know what I'm saying? And it's like, that's what makes them great rock stars to me. You know, that's, yeah. I don't know. I love interviewing Gene. And so, yeah, a few years ago, I'm like, man, I haven't seen any tweets from Gene lately. I go to his thing and I'm blocked. I'm like, what in the living hell? And so then when I interviewed him a couple of years ago, maybe, a year and a half ago or something like that, I said, hey, man, why am I blocked on your Twitter? You know, I don't know. I don't know what happens. I got people looking over my shoulders. I don't know how to do this. You know, what is Twitter? He's, you know, and so finally I was unblocked like hours later. So,
yeah, well that's cool
there
for you.
You
I would love it. You know what, though? I should check before and after this gets published. And if I get blocked, it means he listens to this podcast.
Well, I would suspect you're not going to get blocked.
I would suspect the same thing.
But, you know, it's like one of those things. I'm just going to be honest. It's like growing up in the 70s and stuff, like Kiss was like larger than life.
Sure,
you know
I mean? Do get that. They're a little before my time, and that could be why I don't connect
That's
with them.
Probably. And it's like there was this kid that lived down the street from me, and I was in second grade, and he was in first grade. And I'll never forget this. His name was Mike Eilenfeld, and he moved years and years and years ago. Like, I don't even know if he made it to the second grade on our street, right? He was in kindergarten. He would have his Kiss stuff on all the time, running up and down the street. Yeah, and that's where I really got my first, like, you know, look at Kiss. But it still didn't really grab me as far as music did until I got in seventh grade when I heard Ozzy Crazy Train, like we were talking about before. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I don't know. Why would... Just stop with your Kiss talk already.
All right, well. To answer your question, I would not put on Kiss makeup and play bass.
Al Beck always leads us down the wrong path here on the Talkin' Rock and Meltdown podcast.
That's what I do best.
So, anyways.
Certainly nothing else.
Yeah, besides the fact that you don't like Kiss, there's some more sad news going on.
Yeah, there is, unfortunately. You know, we just talked about on a recent episode of the podcast that Eddie Money revealed that he had stage 4 esophageal cancer. Well, unfortunately, as we record this today, the news just recently broke that he has passed away as a result of that cancer. He was 70 years old at the time.
Yeah, it's too bad. Yeah, he just really talked about this just recently.
Yeah.
So
I mean, it was quick. It was very quick. We're talking a matter of weeks between him revealing it and then passing away.
Yeah. Moving on, we got Green Day news. So we were talking about this Hella Mega, like the rumors were speculating and circulating, I should say, around as far as if that tour was going to happen or whatever. And the rumors didn't, you know, they weren't rumors for very long.
No, they really weren't. I mean, the rumors were saying that they were going to be announcing something as early as the next day. And that's exactly how it happened. It is refreshing that a rumor turned out to be true for a change. But yes, the Hella Mega Tour, this is, we're talking Green Day, we're talking Weezer, we are talking Fall Out Boy all together. Here's the thing, it's announced way, way in advance. This is a 2020 tour. The first tour dates that you can see up at HellaMegaTour.com are actually in Europe, and the whole thing kicks off in June. Of course, you can find this Talkin' Rock with Meltdown podcast at WRF.com and Rock929Rocks.com. So I figured I'd throw out the Detroit concert date is going to be on August 19th at Comerica Park, and in Boston, August 27th at Fenway. And in addition to all of this news, each band has actually released a new song corresponding with the announcement of the tour.
Yeah, it's pretty cool when they announce the tour and stuff, and the bands are like, you know, yeah, let's just release a new song, get the, you know, some press for the tour. Mm-hmm. And you know, you talk about how it's gonna, you know, like the tour is like a year away, but is Green Day ready to play stadiums? You know what I'm saying? We'll find out.
Yeah.
So they got to sell a lot of tickets.
Yeah.
So
I think they could do. Dude, they're pretty huge. I think they won't have any problem.
I saw them a few years ago play here at the Fillmore Theater, which is like a 3,000 seat.
Yeah, it's a medium room.
Yeah,
a
theater. And yeah. I'll tell you what, man, the show was awesome. And I'm not a huge Green Day fan, but I thought the show was great.
Mm-hmm.
So moving on, Ozzy and Sharon. Sharon's saying Ozzy's back on the mend here. Ozzy is, you know, this is nothing new to anyone that's followed Ozzy's career. It seems like almost a yearly event as to, you know, what's going to
happen. Oh, he's falling fallen off of ATVs. This one, he just tripped over a curb or something. I don't know. But as we do know, Ozzy earlier this year, he took a stumble and they had to cancel tour dates. We found out later that his health was it was pretty serious. This was after, remember, he also had a bout with pneumonia that took him out just before he fell down. But his wife Sharon Osbourne was just on Jimmy Kimmel and was talking about, he does seem to be on the mend, but she says you should see x-rays of him. There's bolts all over his chest and stuff these days. It's like, she said, now you know why they call him Iron Man.
They call him Iron Man?
Yeah, I guess so. Okay. But yeah, he does seem to be doing a lot better. I saw another report that he is continuing to hope that he'll be back on the road early next year at some point. I know that was the projected, that maybe January 2020 he'd be back up on stage. But he did say that, I saw another interview with Ozzy. He said, this was the worst effing year of my life. Between all the health issues, I think Jack has had some problems too going on.
I think he might have had some legal problems.
Yeah, but I mean, the point is, like, not only has he injured, had the pneumonia, Jack's had issues. I mean, he said it's been a really rough year. Also, his wife, I don't know if you saw Sharon's new plastic surgery, but she looks like the Joker now. So
really? I haven't seen it.
Dude, she got a crazy facelift.
All right. Well, I know that she was going to. You know what? I always thought she was, like, kind of good looking. You watch the Osbournes and stuff, and she's kind of good looking, you know? And I don't know. What do you think?
Are we talking about the new facelift?
No, I haven't seen the new one.
I mean, I think she's doing all right. You know, again, this is, you know, she's a little bit older for me, but, you know, I can see how she bagged a rock star.
Well, she bagged a rock star because her father was his manager back in the 80s. So, I'm not liking
that
at all.
Not good. Yeah. She just revealed that, I think, earlier this week. So, I don't know.
She looks totally different, you know, obviously.
I don't know, man. Like, when it comes to stuff like that, I'm a fan of aging gracefully, which is easy for me to say coming up on 33.
Yeah, and you're not, Tex.
I'm not. Yeah, most people think I'm in my 60s, so.
Yeah, that's true.
But, you know, so, I'm balding and going gray, and I'm just going to let it happen.
Yeah, there you go. Gracefully. All right, so let's move on to AC/DC, because this was kind of a fun story.
Yeah, it was a little bit. You know, we had that story recently about the lady used Metallica to scare off that cougar. Well, now some police deputies have done the same thing, although this time they're using AC/DC, and the target may be a little less menacing than a cougar. They scared off a bison that was blocking the
highway. Was it just one? I thought it was a bunch.
I think there was a few, yeah. But they chose to use, I believe, Hell's Bells was the
selection. Oh, really? Nice.
Which is funny, because if you're going to use a song to scare them off, that one's got a little bit of a slow build to it. So it's so maybe a little bit of confusion from the bison before they actually got scared.
Did they have, like, the speakers on top of their...
I think they did do it over the loudspeakers, yeah.
What's his name? Buford there in Smokey and the Bandit.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, that was a great story.
Dude,
I saw that
Jackie
earlier.
Gleason right there.
Yeah, some bitch.
So, that's a great one.
Hey, we got this ghost track, which I don't know, man. It's like, you know, I'm a ghost fan just like anybody is, but let's see if we can give this a listen here. This is called the Kiss the Go-Goat.
Yeah.
I think the hook is... I'm not feeling this one right off the top of my head, but I don't know. Have you heard this song yet or no?
No, this is the first time hearing it.
Yeah. I don't know the hook. It's like, just throw in the Satan and the Lucifer and stuff and just be evil, you know?
Sure.
I don't know.
Now, they do say with this new track, the video serves as a unique origin story for Papa Nile, or however the hell you say all these things, and Sister Imperator. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And what's funny is I know this for a fact that, what's his name, Tobias Forge is sometimes not even in these videos. Like,
that doesn't surprise me.
No, like that's him, right? But it might not even be him.
Right.
So I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah.
So, and finally, U2, what do you got going on?
Well, I think this is amusing. I'm not a big U2 fan, but I can see how this might work, though. I guess, apparently, science has proven that one of U2's songs is the most ideal lullaby for babies.
Really?
So that might explain why I get sleepy when I listen to
YouTube. Say, I've fallen asleep to YouTube many times. It's so funny because U2's last record, like, you know, people bitch and complain about stealing music and all this stuff, right? And then U2 puts out their last record and puts it on everybody's phone for free,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And people, like, lose their minds.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what, I was one of them. I'm like, how do I get this stupid thing off my phone?
Yeah. Well, evidently, though, their song One is the ideal lullaby. And there's a variety of researchers who analyze about 4,500 songs that were featured on various lullaby playlists on Spotify. And from those songs, the researchers determined that in overall average, beats per minute and common key and time signature determined the perfect formula for a lullaby. And evidently, U2's One turns out is the perfect lullaby for a baby.
Huh, is that
and
right?
And also radio personalities who do a podcast called Talking Rock with Meltdown.
Well, you know, I thought that, you know, really, I thought you put me to sleep. But now it's it's really the proof is in the pudding as far as U2 is. Yeah, you know what? I got to admit, I'm not a huge U2 fan.
I'm not either. I mean, they've got one of those cult followings. It's like a...
Well,
like
a, that's a pretty big cult.
Yeah, it is a big cult. But I mean, like a Dave Matthews Band. Like, you got those fans that love their band, and people who are into U2 love their U2, but they're not really for me. That's okay. And there's nothing wrong with it if you are into them. So, you know, if you're upset with me, I don't really want to get a tweet from you because I don't care. I've upset the Kiss people, the U2 people. I probably mispronounced the ghost character names.
Yeah, right.
I've upset a lot of people.
This was not your shining moment, I have to say.
I'm perfectly happy with it, though.
Of course you are.
I'm satisfied.
Anyway, yeah. Well, you know, you do put the bar low.
I do. It's on the ground. I just leave it on the floor.
Anyways, give your social so people cannot follow you.
That's right. You can block me at Al Beck Radio, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
That's right. There you go. So at Meltdown WRIF, 248-586-2988. Thanks for your feedback on the feedback line. I can't believe how many people ask you to call and, like, don't leave messages. It's like, I don't know if they're just calling to just hear my voice on the answering machine. I'm not sure how that works. But anyways, like I said at the beginning of the show, we've got Twisted, I know, at least for a fact, coming up next week, because that interview is done. It's in the can. Those guys have a very busy year coming up. Of course, this is their time of year. With Halloween right around the corner. And they've got action figures, and we talk about all sorts of stuff, man. You think you're busy? Man, you got nothing on the guys from Twisted. So we'll do that next week as well. And once again, 5-star ratings, reviews, and subscribe to the Talkin' Rock Podcast. Thanks so much for listening.